Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, episode 70. The original series, season 3, episode 20, The Way to Eden.
Only the primitives can cleanse me. I cannot purge myself until I am among them. Only their way of living is right. I must go to them.
Your very presence will destroy the people you seek. Surely you know that.
I shall go to them and be one with them. And together we shall build a world such as this galaxy has never seen. A world. A life. A life.
Dr. Severin is insane. That blew my mind. So welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast. This, I believe, is episode 70. Is that correct, Jesse?
Yes.
All right. Episode 70 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast, in which we will be discussing the original series, season 3, episode, The Way...
Way.
To Eden.
Way.
An infamous.
This is the way.
An infamous. Yeah, this is indeed the way.
No way.
So first of all, Dan is out again, but this time he's on a highly publicized secret mission. Lieutenant Dan got promoted to captain, and he's now the captain of a big-ass cargo ship in the Suez Canal.
And ran into ground.
So that's where he is. Yeah, so he couldn't join us this week, but we are instead joined by our Philadelphia correspondent, Jimmy.
Thank you for having me.
We're absolutely happy to have you. And Jimmy's been on a number of previous episodes. We don't have the numbers. You just listen to all the episodes.
Every time, like, I'm here and there, like, I do, like, the original series, and it's always season 3 with you guys. Like, the last, I did, like, a wink of an eye.
That's right. A good one. Well, I mean, so the Way to Eden, we wanted to do this because we wanted to do something a little bit fun, lighthearted, and this is often tops the list of best worst episodes of Star Trek, right?
It's really silly.
It's hilarious, like, reading about, like, how people just, they're like, this episode, and the cast and, you know, everyone else is like,
James,
take it or leave it.
James Doohan hated this episode. I think it's the only episode of Star Trek he said he didn't like.
he said it's another,
like, James Doohan was like, it's just a filler. It was nothing episode. Yeah.
I think there was a lot of that in the third season. You know, the Star Trek had been canceled after season 2. And a fan letter writing campaign was able to bring them back for a third season, but budget issues and all sorts of stuff going on. And so we get a lot of odd episodes in there, and this is definitely one of them. Towards the end of this,
kind of fun.
Yeah, towards the end of the season. But I do think it's fun. It's entertaining to watch. And if you really think about it, there are the bones of. Of some really interesting, like, there's an interesting episode in here, and it's just a matter of pulling it out. Basically, it seems like they had a whole bunch of story ideas and they tried to squish them all into one episode, right? So they didn't know what story they wanted to tell, right? Because the story of the temptation of a life free from technology in a future dominated by technology, you know, that sort of thing. That's an interesting story. But then, like, the tension between a rejection of authority and a favor of peace versus, like, getting peace by lethal means, you know, that's in this story too, but it's kind of its own kind of thing, right? And then you have Spock is the scientist guy, but then he's sympathetic or even attracted to their philosophy.
Yeah, no, he's totally sympathetic to their...
But that's an interesting idea, but... And then of course, surrounding the whole thing is it's like a screwball comedy where Captain Kirk is which is weird because he has a reputation for a resistance to authority, but in this case he's being positioned as the stuffed shirt bureaucrat
Herbert.
and he's got to like babysit all these like crazy space hippies, and there's all this comedic tomfoolery about like, oh, these and at the end he's all like, you know, he, I don't know. It was the, my very long-winded point is there are all these ideas in here, and I think they should have picked like maybe two of them or three of them, because some of these are weird and contradictory, and so I have no idea what the message of
and not had like a bunch of weird musical numbers that are not that good.
Okay.
I did like the jam with Spock.
Yeah.
That was all right.
That was, I want to know is, because so the first thing we have to call out here is that the guy who played Adam was Charles fucking Napier.
Yeah.
Who looks like a maniacal Matt Besser.
He's the only one with that has like shoes on, but he's got those, it's like those crazy boots.
Like. And his headpiece keeps like falling off. Yeah. Like he keeps. But Charles Napier, who all of you out there in one way or another, whether you don't recognize his name or not, you will know this fella. He was in
Rambo 2, First Blood.
Yeah, he was in Rambo 2, Silence of the Lambs.
Yes.
What else was he in? He was in a bunch of stuff.
He's in a bunch of movies.
Austin Powers, of course. Right, Blues Brothers. The Blues Brothers is where I mainly remember him from. He was the country singer who started.
The Blues Brothers. But
for Star Trek fans, he was in Deep Space Nine's episode Little Green Men.
Little Green Men.
Oh yeah, the critic. He did lots of Duke television,
lots of voice work.
He's got that recognizable face, but it's still I don't know. It's wild to see him in this episode.
See him all young.
And also to know that he wrote a lot of those songs.
Right.
I think he was just making them up right there on the spot.
Yeah, maybe.
It's hilarious.
Maybe. But the music is a contentious part of this episode, right? Because, Jesse, you commented, and a lot of people comment on how, you know, it's sort of like this terrible, weird filler. I used to think that, and I still kind of think that, but I don't know. I was somewhat charmed this time when I was, like, listening to the lyrics. And I wasn't buying that it would like brainwash people, but I don't know. A lot of this episode, I was like, am I supposed to agree with these hippies? Because in a lot of ways, I'm like, yeah, they're making really good points here. What I don't know is what position were the producers taking with regard to the 1960s counterculture, which this is obviously lampooning or parroting or referencing at the very least.
I mean, because like for the counterculture, you totally have them. It's sort of lampooning because they have all the stuff painted on them, and they just, you know, it's maybe the
egg brooches,
sort of like the privileged kids that are getting away with lots of stuff.
Yeah,
they're not like
right. They can't be touched because the Cthulhuin.
They can't really survive on that planet,
even though they stole a ship.
Yeah,
that was. I think the motivations were somewhat contradictory and perplexing in the sense getting back to what I was saying about the too many ideas. I think it would have been really interesting if the whole story was these are nice hippie kids and they, you know, the ambassador's son, et cetera, the ex-scientist, et cetera, and you know, make it a little more lighthearted, but have it be an exploration of the tension between their ideas, which sound very appealing, and the whole Starfleet Federation is a paradise empire type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because as it stands, you know, they follow this guy who Dr. Severin, I mean, he's clearly a Timothy Leary analog, right?
Yeah, that's what he's supposed to be.
And again, that complicates things because, I mean, Timothy Leary was also clearly a genius, highly educated in elite institutions, and then he turned, quote-unquote, turned, you know, and turned against them and was sort of like, I've been in these things and they suck. And then the problem with Dr. Severin is on the one hand, they want him to be that sort of Timothy Leary leader, but then they want to say he's insane, and we can get to that in a second. And then they give him this disease...
He's Typhoid Mary.
Where I'm not entirely clear.
Yeah.
What the disease? It's a hat on a hat on a hat.
Some kind of strep disease.
Yeah, he's got like he's a carrier of Synthococcus novae.
Yeah.
Oh,
it was a disease that was created in sterile environments of spaceships, star bases, and artificial atmospheres.
And that's right. That's an interesting idea on its own.
Yeah.
Unto itself, it's just one more. Yeah, it's a hat on a hat. Yeah.
So it's like, for example, if the original motivation that's implied is that he has come to this realization philosophically and he wants to live this more natural philosophical life, right? All right. But then they say that he has this disease, so that confuses things because it could be, well, he has this disease and now he now that he can't go to quote unquote primitive areas. I mean, the terms used in this episode are problematic. Out the wazoo. But it's sort of like it's kind of giving him an extra motivation when the philosophical motivation is sufficient. And then he's got this, I don't know, I'm not clear on where they were trying to go with that. And maybe they weren't clear either, because I think even the writers don't really defend this. By the way, this the original story idea was developed by DC Fontana, who, of course, is one of the most prolific and important of the Star Trek writers. And and she actually insisted by the end to use her, I think it's Michael Richards or Michael Richardson. It's her pseudonym she uses when she doesn't want to be she wants to get paid, but she doesn't want to get associated with the script. Right,
because they rewrote it.
Like they rewrote it. There was a bunch of rewrites.
There was all kinds of crazy backstory stuff that was in this episode. And
something about
right, because it was supposed to be like McCoy's daughter,
Joanna.
And Kirk hits on her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's all kinds awkward. Of
other weird stuff.
I don't know. It's just, again, the disease, Dr. Severin's motivation.
Russian hippies.
I want to go to Eden, baby.
What kind of science fiction is that? Russian hippies.
It just sort of doesn't hang together.
They don't have hippies in Russia.
Well, the funny thing is it's one thing when you have a storyline and you need to fill in some holes, but they kind of added holes to it.
Yeah.
Because they started with something pretty straightforward. This is a little anarchist group. Okay, let's play with that idea. Let's go back and forth and challenge those ideas. But with the Dr. Severin and the insanity. Okay, let's talk about, is Dr. Severin insane? Dr. Severin, he talks to Spock. And after that conversation, forget about what happens later, because yes, I guess you can say biting into a bunch of poisoned fruit after you've already seen people get horribly burned by it. That you, may, I don't know if I use the term insane.
Two of those dummies ate that fruit.
Yeah.
Right.
But you'd say it's irrational at the very least, right? So, okay. Later in the episode, sure. But we have this conversation between Dr. Severin and Spock, and then Spock immediately says, Dr. Severin's insane. I didn't see anything in that conversation. I'm not saying I agreed with Dr. Severin's position.
It wasn't especially crazy talk.
He wasn't saying completely. He was kind of selfish a little bit and a little bit grandiose.
He says he's insane, but the movement like isn't insane.
Right.
Yeah, and it's I don't know. It just seemed still weird to jump to that conclusion based off of that particular conversation, and then look in the files later. I don't know. It's a sloppy story, I think. And they kept adding stuff to it and not letting any particular thread breathe in the way I think it needed to. Like the whole Spock thing, right? Like Spock being all into these folks.
Yeah.
It was Sulu was too. It was Herbert. Hilarious.
Yeah, Sulu was all like,
that was weird, that funny egg brooch.
I kind of was like, what's going on?
Yeah, and I mean, the Sulu thing, I mean, even Spock, I don't think there's a problem with it. It's kind of interesting, actually, and it's an interesting angle on Spock that in fact, we kind of see a little bit more of later on, like in the Star Trek The Motion Picture. He, at the beginning, he's trying to achieve Kolinar, which is, a complete expulsion of the emotions, but there are some connections in the way that's presented to sort of being like more in touch, with the universe or whatever. And in Star Trek V, there's also a similar kind of vibe, in that Cybok is all trying to find Shakari, which is sort of like an Eden place. And there's sort of a similar result in that case. So it's not completely out of character for Spock, but I don't know. It just felt like in this episode, he seemed to be somewhat illogical in how he was acting with some of these people.
I thought he showed like mercy, and they were up to no good a little bit. I mean, the counterculture, it goes against the authority, but then it's like, oh, we kind of fucked up ourselves and oops.
They just don't really know how to, they wouldn't know how to handle themselves in real life, actually on that planet trying to make it like.
Yeah. And again, is that one of the messages or not? Cause I keep going back and forth between making you kind of like sympathetic with them versus the space.
We all want a utopia, but it'll never be achieved.
Well, so, okay. So you have space hippies and they're all about peace and love and getting rid of technology and whatever. But their leader is telling them that it's okay to use mass murder and violence in order to achieve that goal of peace, positioning them as they deserve the peace and the sacrifice of other lives is awesome. It's okay. Now, you get the vibe some of the hippies are a little feel bad about that or whatever, right? But on the other hand, they also make the hippies really aggravating and obnoxious.
Yeah.
Right? So
they're sitting down like in the transporter room.
So when Kirk is sort of aggravated by them, I guess, you know.
Yeah, there was that weird sit-in thing. It's like that was a
Yeah, the sit-in yeah. was hilarious.
Hippies have a sit-in.
Jenny Herbert.
And then so like, yeah, and so Kirk is all aggravated. So I guess in one sense, you are positioned as the audience from Kirk's perspective because these people are kind of aggravating. But then, you know, what they're actually saying sounds nice, maybe perhaps a little naive, depending on your perspective. But I just keep coming back to the ideas. Like, I'm really struggling to see what the writers wanted us to see. And I know it might be a fool's errand because it's just seemingly a poorly written episode of Star Trek late in the very last season of the show when everyone's like, fuck this.
It's real now.
Ah. It's real.
It's now. It's real now, man.
Yeah. What did you think of the slang?
It was kind of interesting, just in a funny kind of like they're making up their own sort of their own version of a hipster. It's kind of surreal, you know. It was one of the more interesting parts of the episode for me.
TOS is...
There wasn't much to it.
It might have retain a certain... I mean, again, this depends on your perspective. Maybe this is charming, maybe it's not. But if you had a similar scenario, and I'm sure they probably did, good chance in a modern Star Trek episode, they'd be hiring a linguist or an anthropologist to develop...
Make up a language. You know,
yeah, sort of extrapolate future slang terms or whatever.
Right.
Or they might just not bother. In this case, it was just...
That's totally spaced.
It was just these writers being all like, what do you think kids will sound like a few hundred years in the future?
Herbert.
They're going to say things like Hoibit.
That was an interesting one, I thought.
The Herbert, there's a rumor that it was chosen because the producer of the third season of Star Trek like disliked or had some beef with the previous producer whose name was like Herbert Solo. The other rumor is that it's meant to reference Herbert Hoover. Which I guess so. I don't entirely see the connection. I mean, I do kind of tangentially see the connection there for this, but the idea.
I guess back then people were still talking about Herbert Hoover.
Yeah, I mean, well, today we're talking about Karens.
Yeah.
Right. You know, which true. I mean, I'm sympathetic to the folks that are named Karen out there. Many of whom I have many friends named Karen. Yeah. So Herbert is a. I agree. That's a fun one. What was the other one about? Something about sound. Like we'll make a sound. I can't remember now.
Well, they were talking about they one guy was talking about a session. Like having a session, which, you know, just like a jam session, I guess. But we reach.
Oh yeah, we reach, and then Kirk has that at the end.
Yeah,
he's all like, "We reach," and I was like, "I think you're reaching right there, Captain Kirk."
Yeah, that was
that whole thing is a reach. So I do think that the. A lot of the characterizations were a little off. We touched on it with Spock and with Kirk, because again, I know Kirk is a guy who follows orders and he's a good Starfleet officer and all that, but again, often
he always goes against Starfleet.
Yeah, or
but
around,
then in this episode, he was like all for Starfleet, because usually he's like, I'm for Starfleet, but he bends the rules to serve his own needs.
He's being like all nice to this ambassador's son, like this whole ambassador's son thing where, I mean, which I totally understand. I'm not saying he's not going to be nice, but that seems more like a quote unquote stuff shirt captain, not the swashbuckling captain.
They were
captain.
Doing fucked up shit because they were in the neutral zone and then they went like right into Romulan space and they stole some ships and blew some shit up and like
blew some shit up.
And they were going around trying to get people to quit Starfleet, which again, I'm fine. Let them sing their little songs and tell people you should quit Starfleet. I'm not stressing out about that.
They got plenty of people.
But I can also understand, you know, the captain of the ship being aggravated. They're aggravating people, as we've suggested before.
Totally.
Chekhov was also a little weird this episode.
Yeah.
He was kind of stuffy and all like, no.
He was a total stuff shirt.
And that was not, normally his character was the more goofy, kind of fun.
Right. He's supposed to be the more fun young one.
Yeah. I don't know. It was a little, had an odd vibe to it, the characterization.
Yeah. And I was like, well, this is a strange one for Chekhov. Usually he's a little more lighthearted than all like, Corina, why are you doing this?
He sounded like the Count. He had a super vampire.
One, two, three.
They both did. Both of those. Galina. Even the Russian girl, too.
What was his middle name? Pavlovich? Papadopoulos? Papadopoulos?
They just picked the three most Russian names.
Andreevich. Yeah. So his father's name is Andrei.
They might as well have named him like Russia Russianson or something. Like, they just picked like the most. Like,
Russia McRussianson.
Well, we're Americans. Let's pick some Russian names and throw them together.
And it was during the height of the Cold War.
Yeah, right.
And the monkeys.
We're gonna call you Russian Russianovich, and you're gonna be the most Russianest guy on television.
Man, this guy.
What about
the
nuclear vessels?
I was thinking that maybe one reason why this episode and some other season three episodes have a certain peculiar vibe to them is that on the one hand, these folks, these actors, and these human beings.
They're human beings
who inhabit Hollywood. People. They know these characters very well. They've been playing them now for multiple years, long running. I mean, I know it got canceled well short, but you know, these long seasons, you know, got long episodes.
They did a lot back then, yeah.
Yeah.
And they are professionals.
A ton of episodes.
They are professionals. So they have grown into and inhabited their characters very well. But this is a poorly written episode. Spock's brain is a poorly written episode, right? So that there's an odd disconnect when you have the writing and, you know, the dialogue and just is just not great, but it's being extremely well acted by the actors themselves. So I thought Leonard Nimoy, you know, and today is his birthday, by the way. He would have been 90 years old. Leonard Nimoy was really good in this episode, even though he was doing weird things like chilling and just like playing his lute in his office a little bit. And
yeah, that was awesome.
He was all like sticking
play this, brother?
He was at one point, he was all just like, not quite chewing on his pen, but you know.
Oh, that was, yeah, I was going to say, like, he's being like all kind of strangely nonverbal when that guy came in and he was just like nodding and like pointing and was like, yeah.
You think he thought maybe someone's going to have it? Some little fun with Charles Napier? He was just hanging back to catch the vibe? Yeah. it was odd, but he did a good job. And I thought Shatner, who, you know, Kirk is not in this episode a whole lot.
No.
They do so much with the hippies and they have those long scenes of like, you know, playing.
Some kind of funny instrument.
It goes on, man.
I love
that one, like Scotty's like that dude on the bridge that just,
that
dude is jamming to it. It's so funny. It's so square. But
all the scenes, because there are a couple scenes where they're panning through. The one with Scotty is the best, but there are a couple scenes where they're panning through crew just bebopping.
Yeah.
And Sulu's all bopping along.
The girl's playing that funny bicycle wheel.
Yeah. And the with Scotty, Scotty's just wandering around scowling at people. But again, it's funny. James Doohan does a great job of, he's playing Scotty and Shatner's playing Kirk. Again, out of character Kirk, but he's kind of working with it, you know. So I don't know. It's a theory that maybe that lends to some of the odd atmosphere of some of these later ones.
Speaking of not on the show that much, there was some weird white lady sitting in O'Hara's seat.
Yes. I don't know what the
deal. Oh yeah, Lieutenant Palmer. I was like, where's Uhura?
She's another episodes in third season, right?
I think so. Yeah. I think she's in a couple other ones.
So Uhura wasn't off the show, right? She's Uhura's in other episodes.
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I thought so.
Going through to the end. I mean, it's always a little tricky.
They
just
changed it up like the animated series where sometimes there's a cat.
Because she's in the animated series.
And it also.
But sometimes they got that cat chick.
The production order back, they switch stuff around all the time. I mean, they still do that a little bit, but with the serialized shows, you can't do that. But back then, you know, they would produce these shows in various, they would film them in a certain order and it wouldn't always be the same order it came out necessarily.
Oh, right. That's true.
the special effects are good. I mean, you know, I watched the HD upgraded proper version. I guess that's the most common one.
These days. Like the beginning.
It's really
the,
nice looking.
The stolen.
Yeah, that was cool.
That's pretty cool.
That they did a new design for that particular ship because in the old version, and I was checking it out on Memory Alpha.
Oh snap!
They used the Tholian ship. And just put some nacelles on the side, like kind of glued them on, and it looked silly. And the heating effect kind of looked goofy. So when they were doing these upgrades, they basically had to toss all the space effects because re-scanning everything, they had the 35 millimeter footage on film, which was great, but the special effects were they were composited in some strange way, so it was just not going to be workable to rely on those. So they decided early on they would just redo everything with CGI, and in the vast majority of cases, it looks exactly like the original, other than it's in CGI, right? Mm-hmm. They stay really close to it. Maybe they add more detail, you know, basic things like that. But a lot, you know, the framing and the designs of the ships, you know, they stayed very close to in the majority of cases. But there are a number of cases like this one where it really made sense to be like, look, we're not going to keep that silly design. We'll make something cool, some new cool thing. And
The touch-up stuff is really complements the show nicely.
Oh yeah, and they kept
it's
to the
amazing
style.
How much it makes it better.
Yeah, they really stick to the style, even though they're making some pretty prettiness upgrades. But like I love how they keep the red and blue stars in the starfield, right? Because that was they had that, and
yeah, I like those.
It's
cool.
If you're used to Star Trek, it throws you off because you just normally think of the white stars or maybe the rainbow haloed star. But these are just like, no, that's just a fucking blue dot, and that's a red dot.
There's a couple of red dots,
and it's all like it's all wiggling. It's all like wiggling, like. Somebody they
pulsar.
They had to like get the top engineers to develop an algorithm to precisely match the wiggling from the original footage. I want to talk a little bit more. I want to talk more especially because you two gentlemen have some actual musical experience. I want to hear more about those songs and love them or hate them. I mean, were they proper jams? Did they follow some of the did they make sense, or was it old people
for like a bad musical?
Because if Napier had a part in playing in writing these,
from what I read, he wrote them, and the other woman that was singing, she wrote
them. Yeah, she wrote like them.
Interesting.
But to me, it just seemed like they were making it up right there.
But I'm curious about. I don't know what the best term is. I don't know, authenticity or whatever, because this was created in 1969, right? So it's right there towards the end of that original counterculture movements.
I think it aired in February.
Yeah, February 21st or something like that.
So it's before the summer.
Before the summer of 69.
That song's from the 80s.
I know. It's a nostalgia song from the 80s. And now people from the 2020s are nostalgic for the 80s.
Oh, man.
Because the 80s made us nostalgic for the 60s.
Oh, no. Yeah. Well, I did like the hubcap she was playing with strings.
Wild. I mean, that's... I'm
kind of funny wheel.
I just can't tell if these are
people...
It
wasn't making any noise.
Like, did they get somebody who knew what they were doing to make these tunes? Or is it just the composer of the standard Star Trek who's like... the stuff the kids listen to, it sounds like this.
Well,
yeah, just jingle jangle a little bit, just jingle, jingle, jingle.
I read that Charles Napier got the role, but at the audition he jumped up on the table.
I'm on the table.
Started singing House of the Rising Sun. Oh, or something, man. Like that.
Yeah, right.
So I think
it's hilarious.
He already had something in mind, and he was like, listen, I'm gonna do the character like this, and they're like, yeah, okay. You're already singing like, yeah, and like,
there is a place.
So we're gonna give you some thigh high boots and a crazy suit.
Oh man, now I wanna hear Charles Napier singing House of the Rising Sun.
Because then, you know, his...
Somewhere on YouTube.
I'll have to look and see if that exists.
If you know the song, you can imagine it. And then, you know, the way he was, you know, it's kind of... The music is sort of in that style. The music of this episode is sort of in that style.
Yeah, it kind of is.
That kind of a song. Some kind of, like, 60s version of an ancient kind of blues tune.
You know, because Charles Napier, right? So you see him in this episode... And the first thing you think, if you're familiar with his the remainder of his career,
he looks young as shit.
Well, not only does he look young as shit and looks like a crazy Matt Besser, who played Crazy Ira on Parks and Recreation, among a million other things. Look up Matt Besser. You'll be like,
Yeah.
But Charles Napier, you know, you look at this role and it's so counter to a lot of the roles he played. If you look at his IMDb, he's playing generals and colonels and lieutenants and police captains.
That's what I usually picture him as.
Or tough guys, bad guys, and things like that.
Yeah.
And
the CIA dudes.
But on the other hand, this episode, The Way to Eden, was Charles Napier's fifth screen credit. And it was within about a year or so of him getting his first screen credit. So this is mega early in his career. Yeah. And then you are regaling me with tales of him hopping upon tables and singing classic old, what is it, The Animals or whatever? Who sang The House of the Rising Sun?
Yeah, Animals.
The Animals,
yeah.
Right? So he's singing... I mean, I know they...
I think it's an ancient...
It's an old song, but they're the ones who popularized it.
Yes.
With their suits and their creepy... The creepy tune. They made a creepy tune on TV, and people were like, what's with the kids these days? These tunes used to be happy, now they're creepy. Talking about using heroin in New Orleans. What's going on with these kids? But lo and behold, you're saying Charles Napier does this, and he's 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 writing the songs, and so I'm like maybe he was a hippie and enjoyed playing the general parts and the police people and stuff as some sort of
I
want to play my enemy kind of thing. So maybe it could be that he identifies with his Adam character a lot more than his later character. But he's dead, so we can't ask him. And if it exists in an interview, he's
been dead for a little while.
Yeah, I think he died at 75. Yeah. So, you got the impression he might have lived a bit of a hard life.
Yeah, he looks, he gets that grizzled kind of hard.
And pretty quick.
Look at him in this episode, you're like, oh, he's all young and.
It's only a few years after this, and he's like rough. He looks rough a few years after.
Or like Rambo 2. Oh, man.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's that's not too long after this. It was like 13 years or something.
80s.
Yeah, it's early 80s.
Like Rambo's probably mid 80s and two.
Rambo 2 has the awesome Lambs helicopter battle.
That was early 90s.
Helicopter.
It's got that helicopter battle.
Hey, brother, do you play?
Yeah. And again, he just kind of like, he was just, he like pointed
is
at
this
the
Falcon?
Thing. He was like, yeah.
He knew it was Vulcan.
Is this Vulcan, brother?
That's now. That's real now.
That's real now. Hey, brother.
Real now.
Do you
brother.
Play? I don't know. It was cringy.
Yeah.
But I kind of, I'm with
Am
you.
Am I crossing you?
I kind of.
He walked in the room. He just walked in his room. Am I crossing you? And Spock's like, no.
I'm just chewing on my pen. Cool.
Take all the liberties.
The
you
one.
Want.
The one.
I reach you. That would sound. Yeah.
Reach around.
That would sound. That sounds like a reach around. The
metaphor.
I guess we have to talk about the biblical metaphor, the Old Testament
of Adam.
The Garden of Eden. So first of all, I mean, okay, Star Trek, particularly the original series, has never shied away from having a rather on the nose metaphor.
The fruit and everything.
Yeah. So the episode is titled The Way to Eden.
Way to Eden.
Eden is a mythical place. And in this case, it's not even a mythical place. It's like a mythical planet. Just happens to be called Eden.
Right.
Maybe they call it, whatever. Okay. And then for some reason, Spock is like, all right, we'll try to find it. Even though all the scientists say it doesn't exist.
And makes Chekhov do some of the work.
So Chekhov runs some orbital mechanics. And explains it. And I did like that part. I liked when he was talking to Irena, his ex-gal pal from the old Academy days.
His ex-girlfriend.
He
one of those was in Starfleet?
And I know, right? It was the terms,
one of
the phrases in this episode.
One of those was in the Academy?
Are indeed problematic. So he's talking to her, and he's, of course, having this weird... it's like, I can't control myself around her. I'm talking to her and I have a huge Russian erection. And we invented erections. Because Chekhov is always saying the Russians invented stuff. That was the gag. At least early on, that was the gag with Chekhov.
Oh, yeah, with the...
they invented
the thing about the wheat.
Yeah, the wheat, the quadrigetic Haley, and you know, a Russian invented wheat. But anyway, so he's in this bizarre 60s style, like the man is next to a beautiful woman and loses all control.
Yeah.
And it's not clear if he's like, oh, I'm going to have sex with this lady.
Mm-hmm.
I guess. I don't know. It's a little odd. It is cool because they do have that part where he's, you know, he's giving that little, you know, he's like, we check the math and, you know, do the calculations and see if we can see the effects of gravity from any uncharted objects, which is really cool. Again, it's undercut a little bit since Irena was described as being a leading scientist while at the Academy. And granted, she could have been a scientist in any field. I don't know. I think if you're on a spaceship, like you might have some like basic understanding of orbital mechanics. It's kind of like on The Expanse. It's cool because there's certain people who are really good at stuff and you know, they got the computers and stuff, but most everybody's got the basic idea. Like they know what the deal is, even if they're not great at it. You know, it's like, I don't know how to drive a train, but I know about trains and I have a basic idea.
How a train.
Yeah. I'm not good at steering train.
You speed it up, slow it down.
I did play a train simulator game once and it was one of the most fun video games I ever played. Wow. And all you could do was accelerate and slow down. There was one knob. I mean, there was a bunch of knobs and dials, but yeah. Anyway.
What kind of cargo were you hauling?
It depended on what the truck kind of train. You could have passengers. You could have coal.
Like a bunch of clowns.
Oh.
You could have, I don't know if you could have clowns, maybe in an expansion pack, but it would be interesting. I don't chickens, know. I just like going train. On train trips through the Alpine.
Lumber.
I have a habit, as people who know me personally will know, I have a habit of popping on one of those YouTube videos, which is just somebody puts a camera in a train cab somewhere in the Alps.
Yeah, that's pretty
cool. And it's just a train trip down the tracks, just chugging along, smooth as can be, because it's a European train, not some of that American nonsense that
American train's like, falling apart.
We're rattling around, your teeth are all falling out. That's why we go to the dentist so much here, because we're on the train and our teeth are just fucking shaking right out of their sockets.
Our trains crash because our tracks sucked.
Yeah, infrastructure. I'm all for it. Anyway, back to the...
too many trucks.
Star Trek.
Back to the biblical analogies.
The problem is trucks.
The way to Eden.
Adam.
Yeah, so you got this...
Fruit just killed Adam.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it ends, and it's like, even that's okay. I'm fine with that. Because in the sci-fi sense, it works. It's he ate something filled with acid. But then it's like... His name was Adam. It's like, we got it. At this stage, we have that. We understand. I must admit that I enjoy that they did an Eden analogy, but the twist being that Eden was poison. Yes. So again, there's no truly coherent theme or message or moral that I can dig out of this pile of overlapping and contradictory storylines. But I do like the fact that I thought that's an interesting twist. You know, the idea that whether they're trying to say, oh, you can't go back to Eden or we're not made for it or whatever, you can never have it or it was never meant for you. Again, their message isn't clear, but I do like that it's that whole like, oh, it's poison and you can't touch anything and you can't survive here and you're fucked and you're stupid. Go back home. Even though I was rooting for these space hippies, I was rooting for them to find a cool place.
The Adam guy was the only one that could walk around because he was the only one that had shoes on.
Right? I had not considered
the other guys that got they I guess they tried to walk around and they had to go.
Well, they all burned their feet.
Galileo too, because their feet
burned off because acid in the grass.
Even the grass is full of acid.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
And that makeup was pretty wicked.
Yeah.
Well done.
It was painful looking.
Burning your hand on a rose.
Melting off.
Why
was Chekhov being so fucking... They get on the planet and Kirk is like, use caution. Okay, like he didn't even need to say that because
he's an approach with caution.
To do.
Yeah. You're right.
And then what does he do? He goes and touches some alien... fucking plant that he's never heard of before. Yeah. Like, he might as well be with those fucking space hippies. Like,
Chekhov is the impetuous one, which again is more in line with what you'd expect from Chekhov, being the quote unquote young junior officer, somewhat green, somewhat impetuous, always claiming that Russians invented stuff that they didn't.
Ivan Barkov.
But in this episode, he was more about, I have to follow the rules and I'm super rules guy. And I'm even combing my hair extra straight for some reason when normally it's a little bit more floopy and floppy because I'm rules Chekhov.
Yeah, right. Rules Chekhov.
But
be incorrect occasionally and you be correct.
But he burned his hand when he touched that plant. And I guess the fruit could handle act differently. But I guess Adam didn't feel the pain until he consumed the plant, fruit. The fruit, yeah.
He was already singing that song about how he was going to eat all the fruit.
Eat the fruit,
and throw out the rind.
Yeah.
So like,
I was kind of digging that song, actually. There was something a little catchy about it. I think he's sort of like a Tom Bombadil character.
Yeah.
But if Tom Bombadil got hit in the head by Goldberry, yeah. You know, after some sort of spat, you know, after you live a few infinities and, Tom Bombadil is just, you know, people get, maybe like a beaver got sort of upset with him or something. I mean, I guess they didn't have beavers in that particular part of Middle Earth, since that's a new world animal, as I recall. But
well, it is, isn't it?
I believe it is. It's one of those weird ones that we gave to the world.
Yeah, like
flap their tails.
Pumpkins and turkeys.
Canoeing at night and you're floating by a beaver. You freak a beaver out and they slap their tail on the water.
Oh, shit.
Terrifying. Beavers also way bigger than you think.
Yeah.
That's one of those animals that, you know, some animals are smaller than you think, and a beaver is a way bigger than you think if you get your beaver information from, your Lady and the Tramp, for example. Not a good source for beaver information.
Beavers will, like, destroy, like, a river. Like, they can, like, totally, like, divert the river and mess up the riverbed, stream bed.
Fuck up your house if you look at them the wrong way.
Yeah.
But they're majestic. They're majestic in their way. And
they do like the wood.
They do. They
wood.
Do. Quite the mahogany.
They like that wood. They
like some oak.
Chomp, chomp, maple. Chomp.
But anyway, yeah, the Tom Bombadil Adam guy with his leg oodle-oodling and the oodle-ays.
Hey ho, I got a clean belt.
He was playing McCool? Some kind of rake or something.
Yeah, the instruments are great. The instruments are funny.
They are, yeah.
Spock's lute is well thought out and
it looks like a real instrument.
Yeah. That's cool. The rest of them were ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. Like, don't get me wrong.
The sounds they're making don't make any sense.
Like, it looked like a trident.
Yeah. And then
had a little knobby bit on there.
What did you say to me? You called it a hubcap or
accordion?
It was like a hubcap.
Or like, yeah, whatever that was. And it didn't even look like guitar strings. It looked like half of them were just yarn or something.
Yeah, right.
I was like, does that make any sound? Or is that like, do you use it to muffle it?
It was making that funny, like,
why is he holding like a trident
noise? It was like a squeak. Winky noise,
man. It's like
bling bling bling.
Make a winky winky. But yeah, the makeup was another inconsistent thing here, in that I thought the makeup of the feet and stuff was really, yeah, I mean, that was like proper horror style. I mean, yeah, at 60s standards, but pretty good in terms of, you look at that and you're like, ew, gross, I don't want that to happen to me. I'm not going to touch the plant. These people are really silly. On the other hand, as we mentioned, you have Dr. Severin's ears that look like they're falling off the whole fucking
thing.
I watched the episode through twice, and both times.
Like his left one.
Because I remember this from seeing this. It's been a long time since I saw this episode, but I remember the ears being weird. And I was like, are they trying to make it that he's got, is it supposed to be like that? Or is this just shitty? And I came down on it's just shitty, because he's like looking around and like wiggling his head and shit, and his ears are flopping around in some weird way that did not seem like it was the intended design. And Adam, his, especially in the scene with Spock, that's where I noticed it the most, but you see it other places, where he's wearing a skull cap with a wig on top of his skull cap. Okay. And in a lot of the scenes, huge sections of the skull cap are just sort of peeling up. And you can just, you just see the gap, and it's not like it's the makeup is smearing. It's just the thing is coming off mid scene, and they did not stop filming and touch it up and refilm. It's obvious anyone looking through the camera would have seen this. So I guess that indicates the, you know, the sort of budget they were working with. They were like,
they just didn't care.
You get one take and that's it. But yeah, that look for that, particularly as I mentioned in the scene with Spock, where when he's being all groovy with Spock with the bad makeup, and keep an eye out for the bad instruments as well. It's the kind of thing where you would want to, it would be cool to make those instruments in real life, but make them well enough that they actually
they make sense acoustically. Like,
yeah, or I think the ultimate challenge would be to make them look exactly like on the show, but somehow use magic and technology.
Somehow they work, yeah.
To make it so that they actually sound like an electric guitar.
Because I think you could do that nowadays, yeah, with brother. The things you can put on instruments that aren't electric to amplify them. There's all kinds of crazy stuff you can do. So, you know,
it's electric. Wookie,
come
wook
up with something.
Electric. Yeah, because it looked like it was just like accordion, like buttons on the top or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm not, you know, I don't want to denigrate the prop folks or whatever, because again, I know they weren't working with much. And
no, I was like, if that was a cool instrument, if it existed.
Yeah, they put a certain amount of thought into it, and I have no doubt that they had constraints that we are not aware of.
Right. Here's your budget.
Again, getting back to that idea of what can we take away from this episode, because I think it's nice to take something away from it.
We never have to watch it again.
Well, there's that, you know, so I guess one question to ask you guys is, you know, there are lists of, you know, what episodes to watch, what episodes not to watch. And many lists say, skip this episode. Don't even bother with it.
No, you should watch
it. Do you agree, or do you think you should watch it at least once?
Yeah, you should watch it.
You should watch it because it's hilarious. It's like a photograph in time, what they thought hippies were back then, but not really. Yeah. And it tries to do his little social commentary.
Star Trek, it was a thing that happened, you know, like, watch them all and, you know, take it for like, what it is. And,
you know, when I was enjoying the episode, but then it like ended, I was like, yeah, I can see why this one's polarizing.
Partly it's that the ending is somewhat lame. I mean, it's sort of, I think they couldn't figure out an ending that made sense, right? Because it's like, okay, this guy has this disease. If there's going to be people there, he could fuck up all those people. But why do they even mention that? Because there were no people there. So like, it didn't matter. And I know people would be like, well, it just happened to not matter. I'm like, yeah, but I'm talking about from dramatic story structure. You don't need to mention it if it's not going to be a fucking issue. And the only reason he mentioned it is so Spock could make him look slightly more like an asshole, which again is the writers wrestling back and forth with how they're trying to characterize this guy. And then of course they just end up with like, he's just insane. And we're telling you he's insane because Spock says he's insane. And the computer says he's insane. And oh, by the way, at the end, he's going to do some insane shit.
There was a trail. They were walking on a pathway when they got to that planet. So like they weren't immediately on the grass yet.
Yeah,
there was a pathway. Who built that pathway?
Be made of acid though.
That's a good point. Who did build that? Maybe the people are long dead because they, or maybe people went there and in their culture they lay down gravel in order to protect
their feet don't burn them.
You know, like maybe they're just used to that type of shit. I don't know. I agree. I think people should watch it. I will, you know, for, you know, just to put all my cards on the table. I would say that probably for most Star Trek. I think there was some base level of value in just about any episode. Yeah. If you really pushed me, there are some episodes I'd say not to watch. And frankly, if you said, no, you've got to come up with at least 20 episodes not to watch from the original series, very strong chance I would not count this one among them. Even though it's a poorly written episode. It's confusing. They don't know what they're trying to say. And so in the end, they don't really say anything. The ending is weird where the guy sort of dying and is like, okay, whatever. What are you trying to say? And then Kirk is all like, we reach. Okay. It's kind of a stupid episode in a lot of ways, but there is something there. That's what's interesting about it. It's not a total waste of time. And there are episodes that are demonstrably better and more well-written, but I might be more inclined to say, you know what? You don't necessarily need to bother with that because not a lot of character development happens, or it's a storyline that they've done before or after, possibly in a better version, you know, but this one, there's the fact that this aggravates people so much, I think it by itself means that there is value in watching.
I also like Spock at the end shows compassion and mercy.
Yes. Yeah. Although, I mean, you know, he was, I guess, doing that the whole time.
But you know, the others,
he's not Herbert.
He's all like, I hope you find this Eden. I hope you find it. Yeah. Then my brother Cybok is going to be looking for Shakari.
But I hope you find it.
Yeah, yeah.
My adopted sister went into the future. Never saw her.
I really want to watch Star Trek V again sometime soon because similar to this episode.
I thought I'd die alone.
Yeah, that show, that movie has problems, but it also has some key scenes and some key concepts in for the original series crew. And I think not seeing it because the movie has some problems is unfortunate. If you're, you know, at least if you want to be, you know, one of the cool Star Trek people and have a full-bodied understanding of the overall milieu of Star Trek, you don't want to miss Star Trek V, and you don't want to miss The Way to Eden. Nothing other than Spock chewing on a pen and then gently strumming a lute and then rocking out on the lute a little bit more later on. And I really want to know what it was like to film that day because they weren't, I don't know if they were pumping that music into the studio or what, but it just looked like Leonard Nimoy and that lovely actress who I liked. I thought all the people who did the hippie stuff were entertaining and good. What was one of the ambassador's son was named like Tongo or something?
Tongo Rad.
Yeah, Tongo Rad, man.
Victor Brandt.
Dude, that dude was rad.
He had purple hair, dude. That was pretty rad.
Yeah, he did.
It was pretty rad hair.
And with his forehead. They're all about
looks
having
like
this big forehead.
Looks like the hair that people have now. They have that when people have
that's
purple
right.
hair.
That's right. Yeah, it's kind of that purple gray.
I got some purple hair.
I got gray hair.
Yeah. That should make it even make easier it to make it purple. Yeah kids purple. Like the purple hair. You got to get that purple hair.
Purple.
Okay. Any other comments or odds and ends or thoughts? Or
I'm gonna crack my knuckles and jump for joy. I got a clean bill of health from Dr. McCoy.
See, I like that too. There were a lot of those scenes that charmed me
because he's just bebopping and scatting right there on the spot.
Yeah, that was
what he did.
I enjoyed
it. I mean,
hey brother, you play? Do you play?
Of course, you know I play. I don't know. I just really like the crew, like hanging out and bopping. It was kind of like okay, you know, in the lower decks.
Yeah,
they have that concert and everyone's like jamming. It's like okay,
yeah.
Well, if you look at like the way dance. Everyone's kind of like, oh, there's a concert going on. This is rad.
The Zebulon Sisters.
Yeah, the choo choo dances. That is a good.
I was watching that the other day.
The Zebulon Sisters.
I mean, if not like for Scotty's like crewman, like being totally. Da, 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 moving his arm back and forth.
That was great.
Yeah, it's like there's no drums, dude.
That was all. You know, this concept of Starfleet officers suddenly. Okay, if they had done this on Deep Space Nine, or even Voyager, but definitely Deep Space Nine, the people would have been bebopping, but it would be because of some sort of a virus or a worm or some telepathic being that was running away from the Gamma Quadrant and it was seeking asylum.
But, fucking Gamma Quadrant.
But a side effect of its whatever is that it makes everybody dance all goofy. People are like, I don't know, I've got that, I've got the dancing fever of the 1800s.
I've got that toe-tapping feeling.
That 1800s dancing fever where everyone goes insane and dances all night.
In the 1800s?
Dance.
Yeah,
dance,
look it up. Brothers? 1800s dance.
Cakewalks.
Dance, that's whatever.
What it's
cakewalks. There's a term. It's not a cakewalk. It's a bunch of people went, maybe, I thought it was in the 1800s, 1500s maybe.
Oh,
people know what I'm talking about. They know what I'm talking about. It's when everyone in like Paris or something, a bunch of people just started dancing. Like it was mass hysteria kind of thing.
Oh.
Yeah. Look up the
St. Vitus dance.
Look up crazy, crazy people dancing. Isn't the St. Vitus dance?
What do you call it?
When you
have seizures.
Yeah, that's right.
That disease.
Like epilepsy.
Epilepsy.
Beta Epsilon 5.
Epsilon 7.
Epsilon 7. Okay. Okay. Well, I guess that'll, you
I
know.
Think that, I think that's the end.
That concludes our thoughts on that. We did have one. We did have one totally real listener letter.
All right.
One totally real listener letter. Last few weeks we read these at the top of the show, and this week we're changing things up and reading them at the bottom of the show, which is also the end of the show.
The bottom of the show.
Bottomly.
Yeah. So this totally real listener letter says, "Dear Dan, Patrick, and Jesse," and we'll include Jimmy since Jimmy's here this week. And we'll forward this to Dan. Don't worry. So, "Dear Dan, Patrick, and Jesse, just where the hell do you get off?"
I know, right?
Sincerely, Gulliver Tonks, Bragg Creek, Alberta, Canada.
Canada.
There was a short missive this week, and it is a question. We did ask for questions.
Just where the hell?
Hell do you get off? I'm going to respond to that, Gulliver, Mr. Tonks. I think that's a very personal question. I will not respond to it.
That's a pretty open-ended question.
If you want to write me off the air, or Jesse, or Dan, or indeed Jimmy, we might be able to provide some more detailed information. But
like Lafont Plaza?
But that is, it's not going to be an on-the-air sort of thing. But anyway.
I get off at Nutley Street.
We love... Local roadscapes with their hilarious totally names weird. Like Nutley. But anyway, so we love getting letters like that from our listeners. So please feel free to contact us. There are a variety of ways you can contact us. One of those ways is through email.
Email.
Jesse, you wanted to say something?
No. Okay. No, I was just joking around.
You're just getting excited about the email. So,
you can dig it, brother.
You can get us through email at... feedback at itsgotstartrek.com. You can
I got some feedback, right? Yeah.
You type in the email there, you type in a subject, you type in a message, you click send or the variation on that on your computer, and it'll get right to us, and we'll get right back to you. Unless there's a whole bunch of them, and then who knows.
I think you can tweet.
You can also tweet at us. Or follow us on Twitter at It's Got Star Trek, which also works on Instagram, as it happens, and Facebook. We got a thing on Facebook, It's Got Star Trek. YouTube.
Star Trek in your face.
Check out YouTube. Subscribe and like and subscribe and write the reviews and do all the other
send
stuff
us more letters
expected.
And ask us questions about what the fuck, guys.
Yeah,
what the fuck?
Ask us questions about interesting stuff and we might get around to answering it. And in the meantime, that'll do it for us.
Just where do
we
you
made
get
it out of Romulan space?
Where do you get
off? Okay.
We hope that you listen to some groovy tunes over the course of the next week. And
nightlyreading.com.
You can go to nightlyreading.com if you want to listen to some groovy tunes. We haven't decided yet what we'll chat about next week, but we'll you can figure that out on social media and we will let you know, or at our website at www.itsgotstartrek.com, which I imagine you could have derived from the email address, but there it is, just in case you didn't, or you were skipping a forward. You're kind of skipping forward to see at what point, to see if there was anything useful we say towards the end of the episode, which there is. I mean, there's always something. There's always something really good at the end of the episode. I mean, I think
something real now, man.
Regular.
Never drink down river from the herd.
Regular listeners. Well, no, there's always a bit of a bonus at the end of the episode, a little bonus thing, and you're probably skipping ahead, and you've probably skipped ahead a few times now, depending on which podcast player you use and the settings you have applied to that podcast player. But don't worry, we'll get to the bonus thing in a second, because all we wanted to do is say, listen to some groovy tunes, follow us on social media to figure out what we will be discussing on the show next week. And in the meantime, from all of us here at the It's Got Star Trek podcast, all 120 of our employees, we wish you the very best. And we'll talk to you next week.
Dr. Severin will be released when we think he is medically safe.
Stiff man putting my mind in jail, and the judge bang the gavel and say no bail. Gonna lick his hand and wag my tail.
Dr. Severin is insane.